What's up, everybody? Welcome to Hangout in the Holy Land, Land Grant's flagship podcast. I am Josh Dooley, and with me, as always, he is the Marcus Burnett to my Mike Lowry, the one, the only, Chuck Holmes. Chuck, we ride together, we die together, and we podcast together. How are you doing this wonderful Monday evening?
I'm so fired up for this Rutgers game. It's going to be a battle of titans. I'm on the edge of my seat, ready to discuss. Okay, I'm not. I apologize. I'm not that fired up for Rutgers, but we are professionals, and we're going to get this done.
We'll get you there. We'll get you amped up, because at the very least, it's a 6-2 football team. Chuck and I were forced to record on Monday this week due to the fact that we will both be busy during our usual Tuesday evening slot. And that is because we...
Can we talk about that for a second?
Well, I'm getting there. So you and I both have children, which means trick or treat, which means advanced scouting, not the Connor Stallions kind, but rather keeping an eye on our kids' candy haul and then figuring out which items we are going to claim for ourselves. I don't know if this is the direction that you were going, but I have to ask you a serious question. What is your go-to Halloween candy? What do you steal without remorse from your boys?
So for Halloween candy, it's got to be like a Baby Ruth, like a mini Baby Ruth or something I could pop in quick. But can we talk about how it was 74 degrees last week, and tomorrow at 6 p.m., the forecast is calling for 39 degrees? Can we get, I don't need 80. I just need to not freeze my ass off while they go and run around. This is ridiculous. I hate Ohio some days, and tomorrow's one of them. It's either raining or cold every damn year.
I'm going to tell my daughter that's how you build toughness. That's how you build character. I don't want to hear any pissing and moaning. You get out there.
They're not going to complain. I'm going to be the one complaining. And the way our neighborhood's set up, it's really hard to get back to our house. So if I like take a beverage with me, I only get the one. Like, I could fill the cup up, but it's going to be really hard to get back for a refill. And 2 hours is a long time, man.
So they have those like almost like catheter bags or the camel backs. You could put some alcohol into one of those, and then maybe if you're out for beyond a couple hours, take care of business into the other bag. I don't know if you're going to get the straws or the wires mixed up. You may not want to do that, but it's just a recommendation. Yeah, it's gonna be a rough one, but trick or treat is for all the kids. They love it. I'm not a huge sweets person, but for me, you said Baby Ruth, which is, I mean, it's like the RC Cola of candy bars. But,
well, I'm old, man. I mean, what can I say?
I am a sweet, sour, fruity candy type of guy. So Skittles, Sour Patch Kids, Starburst, like, that's up my alley. You can have the chocolate, you can have the candy corn.
You can shove candy corn right up your ass. I'm out.
Do you like malt? Do you like Whoppers?
Oh, I can go with Whoppers. My youngest, for years, he called them Whoppers. So now that's all I call them, even though he's old enough to have realized it.
Those are the most disgusting candy that I've ever come
across. Oh, they're
great.
My
daughter loves them. My daughter absolutely loves them. But I feel like we're going down.
It's like, I don't even know who you are.
We're going down a road, and we might get lost. We might not make it back. So I need to steer us back in the right direction. It is week 10 of the college football season. I think I've sort of lost track because week zero messes with my brain. You got the bye weeks and everything. Regardless, the season is coming to a near end far too quickly. So enjoy these weekends while you can. I know that I will. Ohio State hits the road again to take on Rutgers this weekend, which Chuck and I will get to in just a few minutes. But first, partner, do any other games really deserve our attention this weekend? Not a great slate, several teams on bye. I'm not seeing much outside of LSU at Bama, although I think Bama's on the right track. I'll probably check out Washington at USC as well, just to see if the Huskies get back on track. Anything that you're going to have your eye on?
Yeah, that Bama LSU game, that's really the only, if you think L or if you think USC just can't keep up and they're going to give up 100 points to Washington, this is really the only, Bama and LSU is really the only, like, what would you call it? Like elimination potential game. Alabama could get eliminated if they were to lose to LSU, because once you get to two losses, you're probably out of it. The Washington USC game, I'm just wondering, for me, just as like a gimmick type, I would like to see what kind of points they can actually score. Like I'm looking now, it's only 75 and a half on an over under. I mean, isn't this a guarantee 50 to 45 game?
It's not, and here's why. I have a prediction that USC gives up 35 in the first half and Caleb Williams doesn't come out after halftime. He says, "Forget it. I'm done. There's no sense in being here." So, I don't know. The odds are probably long on that. But if I'm being honest, yeah, it's probably going to be a shootout.
But besides those, nothing. I mean, Pittsburgh stinks. Florida State's going to roll. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State used to be something, but it's not now. I still don't believe in Louisville, Michigan or Purdue. Who cares? UCLA and Arizona might be a decent game. Arizona's actually kind of getting their stuff together a little bit,
Yeah, they're
but
frisky.
again, they're not teams that actually matter in the grand scheme of things. Army Air Force is this week, so I will be checking that out. Here's what we could say. If Army handles business and knocks Air Force out of the undefeated ranks, Sunday's pod is going to be very Army centric. Just I'm letting everybody know now. We are going to celebrate that.
Which means I might have to defend my wife's honor, right? My wife's
Oh
honor,
yeah.
not my
Bring it on.
wife's.
She and I can go at it. Let's go. I completely forgot about that. Good Lord. She knows what's up though. Just because she was smart enough to join the Air Force doesn't mean she doesn't know.
Hey, she says watch out for the triple option.
She should.
Yeah, I'm with you though. It's towards the end of the season, I feel like it's feast or famine. Enough team. Sometimes enough teams have fallen off to where it's like, hey, there's only five, six, seven possibilities as far as teams that can make it to the playoff. Others, all of the games just sort of happen or coincide with the very end of the year. We'll see that sometimes during like traditional rivalry week or very late in the season. So it's going to be a bit low key, in my opinion. But still some games worth watching. And like I said, you only get so many of these. So definitely don't take it for granted. And Chuck, because we will not be privy to press conference Tuesday this week, I know that you wanted to briefly discuss Kyle McCord's injury, as well as some interesting snap count totals from this past Saturday. I'll tee you up for the latter later. But first, we glossed over Kyle McCord's injury that he suffered against Wisconsin in the second half. Seemed like he got his ankle rolled up on. He was definitely gimpy. There was footage of him leaving the stadium with a very, very heavy limp. Ryan Day sort of brushed it off, but I can't decide if that is Ryan Day being Ryan Day. Or if that's Ryan Day not caring about Kyle McCord the way that he does, Emeka Egbuka and TreVeyon Henderson and guys like that. I sort of found it funny because typically Ryan Day, it's close to the vest. Oh, I don't know. We'll see. We'll get him evaluated. I feel good about it, blah, blah, blah. He was just like, nah, he's fine. Bumps and bruises. Yeah, whatever. Don't worry about him. It's like, it's sort of your only quarterback. So we are a bit worried, maybe more so now. And like I said, we just forgot to really get into this Saturday. What, if any, concerns do you have? Like, do you think that Kyle McCord could possibly miss this game at Rutgers?
I don't think he's going to miss the game because of, like you said, there's no depth behind him. But the problem is if he's compromised at all, what does the offense look like at that point? Because it's not like the offense is running on, like, we're not putting up 60 points a game on these teams with him running on full, on both good wheels. So if he has a bad wheel and can't move around, what does that do? And I know he doesn't move a ton, but this is the first time he's been banged up at Ohio State. Who knows how he's going to feel? Who knows what he's going to look like? You can't tell me watching it, like, and I didn't see a bunch of the videos until after we recorded Sunday, but he was legitimately limping and moving very slow when he was going up the ramp. So this was not something where he just got kind of tweaked or something. This is a legit injury. But that being said, I just don't see how they would not run him out there, especially if Devin Brown's not healthy. They're just not going to run Gebbia or Hineholtz out there in a conference game, not on a whim. He would have to be super compromised. Now, with this training staff, who the hell knows what really compromised is anymore? That's kind of the scare with it, I guess, is you have no idea what the hell they're thinking or doing or what kind of crazy treatment's going on. It could be making it worse. It could be making it better. You'd hope it's making it better, but hell, who knows? They might be going to have a voodoo doll right now, and that's how they're trying to heal him. God only knows what the hell's going on in the Woody right now, but it will be interesting to see what kind of shape he's in and how it affects his play if he's compromised at all.
I think it's promising that he finished the game. Now, some of that, or a lot of that, is probably adrenaline. And
everybody finishes the game at Ohio State, though. Player does.
Fair point. To your point, though, yeah, he doesn't move around a ton. He moves around a little bit, moves around when he's required to. I think it could be both a positive and a negative. It's never a positive that your starting quarterback's banged up. But what I mean by that is if he is compromised at all, it may force Ryan Day, Brian Hartline, and the Ohio State offensive coaching staff to get the ball out of his hands quickly. And I think that's when he's at his best. When they're using the middle of the field, when there's a lot of movement and, just crossers, mesh, whatever it is in the middle of the field, I think they're successful. Look at it. Marvin Harrison Jr.'s last couple of weeks, he's scored a couple touchdowns, right, on crossing patterns, just simple underneath stuff. And I think that becomes even more dangerous if and when Emeka Egbuka is out there. So it could force McCord to get the ball out of his hands quickly, which is going to also sort of benefit the offensive line, which occasionally struggles with maintaining blocks or just making a good block in the first place. That's the positive. The negative is, yeah, if he's limited, those rollouts that they've liked or tried to do are probably not going to be available or used very often. And I don't know, it probably means a few less deep shots. And we've seen him connect on those or deeper shots with Marvin Harrison Jr. So I don't know. We'll see. Against my better judgment, I'm going to take Ryan Day at his word. And maybe this is just a bruise is a bruise, right? A bruise can be sore as all hell and it can heal up in a week. It's legitimately a soreness type thing. Whereas a sprain, a strain, or whatever, that's general soreness and, maybe re-aggravation plays a role. But hopefully he's good to go because you're right. Behind McCord, it's Gebbia, it's LK47. I'm not ruling him out if we see him. This could be Tua as a true freshman. I don't know. But the hope is McCord is out there. Now, the other thing that you were interested in, or you sort of found it in the deep, dark world of the interweb there, some interesting snap count totals from this past Saturday against or at Wisconsin. I'm just going to tee you up, lay out what you found to be interesting.
There were a few things that, and you noticed some of it during the game, but once you get really into the numbers, there were some things that were kind of interesting to me. They only ran three wide receivers for about 60% of the snaps, and about 30% they ran two tight ends. But then G. Scott was running routes a lot of that. Now, I know, I'm sure they brought him in some to block, but he was out in routes a ton. Of his 27 snaps, I would venture to say he ran at least half of those. He was like legit running routes. So that, I just wonder if there's zero confidence in any other wide receiver and they actually have more confidence in G. Scott as a route, as like a person to go catch passes than the other wide receivers. And to me, that is very concerning for those guys. And I know you and I talked about some of the receivers that just weren't getting it done. And that to me screams that they're not super confident in them. There's nothing about Wisconsin's defense that would say, hey, we got to line up. And it's not like they're running a 5-2 and you've got to make sure you have everybody accounted for. They run a 3-3-5. If you want to run the ball with just your five linemen, you should be able to. So that one was really interesting to me. I mean, the fact that none of the offensive linemen got subbed out pissed me off, but that wasn't something that was surprising at all. The one that made me really look at this, there was two things that really made me look at this, though. Mitchell Melton played the last two series.
Yep.
And then as a stand-up defensive end, the second to last series, the game wasn't out. It wasn't clinched at that point, and they felt like he was a better option. He actually out-snapped Kenyatta Jackson. And then they had seven defensive tackles record snaps, including Hero Canoe in the second to last series. He was getting snaps, again, when the game wasn't out of line. McDonald got snaps. McKenzie got snaps. Tywan Malone got snaps. It was just really weird that they gave all those guys opportunities late in the game. Melton actually screwed me up. I didn't see the note that he switched to 16 for this game, and I didn't see why he did. Like, we literally paused the TV so I could see the back of his name because I could not figure out who the hell number 16 was. So that one was interesting. Sonny not being in the slot at all broke my heart a little bit. Hancock played all but one snap, so he was in the slot for the entire game. I know Cam Martinez came in for a snap when Ransom got hurt and immediately gave up a big play, so they moved Sonny to strong safety, and Martinez only played five more snaps, and they were at the dime. So I like that they're not just sticking to, hey, this guy plays here and his backup is Cam Martinez. It sure seems like Sonny is just the third safety, and whoever he needs to back up is who he's going to back up. So he's still going to be on the field, hopefully a healthy portion of the time. So those are the things that I saw that I thought were interesting or different from what we've seen in the past.
I think that, well, as far as the defensive rotations go, Jim Knowles and his guys, they've earned my trust. So they can do no wrong, in my opinion. If I had to guess, and I noticed this late in the game, the defensive line rotation was probably wanting to keep fresh guys in there because Wisconsin was going to have to throw the ball. And so it was going to be nothing but getting after the quarterback. They were going to drop seven. So it's four guys and four guys only trying to rush the passer. So you want to get some rotation going there. They like Mitchell Melton, or they've, you know, spoken highly of him in the past. He's been in and out of the lineup, but early on we saw him, right? I think he's got a sack or two this year as well. I think that's what that is all about. As far as the secondary goes, I think it's what you said. Sonny Styles is the chess piece. He's the third guy, and it's, hey, you go here, here, or here. I hope that continues to be the case. obviously don't know anything about Lathan Ransom yet, but that's the defensive side of the ball. I'm not going to really read into anything just because I trust Jim Knowles. And yeah, go ahead.
How about Hancock being so physical that he could take the nickel spot? Like, he's earned that. And he, I mean, he's blitzing, he's holding up and run. Like, I would have never guessed that he would be able to take that spot and be as successful as he was with it. And he has, man. Like, he is a bullet. He is exactly what you hoped Sonny was. And he's 35 pounds lighter and 5 inches shorter, but can handle everything that anybody in the slot could possibly handle. Kudos to him, man. He has impressed me to no end.
You'll appreciate this. I was thinking about it yesterday while watching the Bengals. Jordan Hancock is starting to remind me of Mike Hilton. He's just the perfect slot guy, and yeah, he's so much more physical than you would have expected. Now, Mike Hilton, I think, is pretty tiny. I would say that Jordan Hancock is bigger.
My man's about 5'6". Yeah, Hancock can at least handle outside.
Don't tell Mike Hilton that, though. He thinks he's 6'3", 240. Like, that's just his mentality, and I love him for it. Now, looking back to the offense, honestly, man, with these receivers or these pass catchers, I was thinking about this after our conversation. I don't think it is as much of an indictment as we sort of made it out to be when we recorded yesterday. And here's why. Julian Fleming was banged up. So, you know, and Emeka Egbuka was out. So right there, you're down two starters, which means you've got X and you've got Carnell Tate in the lineup. The rest of the guys have rarely, if ever, seen any action. And when the game is close enough, you want somebody in there you think you can trust. And G. Scott Jr. Is a former wide receiver. You would have to assume that he knows what he's doing out there. He can certainly block. And Brandon Innes arrived in the summer. Like, he's been an Ohio State player for a couple of months. That's it. Jaden Ballard, yeah, I'm surprised we don't see more of him. But I think he's got a very, very, very specific skill set, which is burner, run fast, run far. And so you and I were like, oh, where are these guys? Where are these guys? Well, the truth of the matter is they're not in Columbus anymore. Or there's another reason that maybe they're not playing. They're banged up, or they've been at Ohio State for 15 minutes. Or they're just a guy with a singular, specific skill set. So I think that's what that is. Is it, you know, does it make me feel great? No, it doesn't. But you would have to assume that once Emeka Egbuka and Julian Fleming are hopefully healthy, then you're looking at five deep, and the last guy in that rotation is X or Carnell Tate. And if that's your fifth guy out, great. Like, you feel awesome. So I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into that or not enough. But the snap count totals are interesting. I think every single game is honestly going to be different with this team, or could be different. It just depends on what's going on, the closeness of the game, this, that, and the other. Would you agree with that part?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. It's just it's so, like, we spent so much time hyping that room up as the most talented room in the history of mankind. And don't get me wrong, they've lost talent, but then we talk about these guys that are coming in and they're the next great thing. And I'm not saying they automatically have to be, but you're also 8 games into the season. At some point, if you can help, like, this is the time to help. They're all, like, Brandon Innes is playing special teams every game, so it's not like you're saving a red shirt or anything for him. He's played every game, so he's got to, there's got to be something there. And let's be honest, like, while we want to bag on Kyle McCord for his performance, Fleming doesn't get open. G. Scott wasn't open when he threw to him. Xavier Johnson didn't get a pass throw to him because he was not open when he did get passes thrown to him previously. So these guys that are currently playing aren't getting the separation. And I don't need Marvin Harrison Jr. separation, but good Lord, there's a happy medium. You don't have to be completely covered, and you don't have to be open by 7 yards. You've got to find somebody that can get some separation. And these guys aren't currently doing it, and that's not helping your quarterback.
I just want to say something about our quarterback before we move on too. Kyle McCord is the highest rated passer in the Big Ten. Just want to throw that out there. Just
come
it
on,
is what it
get the hell
it
out of here. Do we want to pull up passer ratings in the nation, though? That doesn't mean anything. You know that. I'm not saying we've never said that he was bad. And you and I think, have been really realistic that he has had some really good games. Saturday, he sucked. But part of the reason he sucked Saturday is he had one guy to throw the ball to that was actually open any part of that game.
His number two and number three receivers were a fifth-year former walk-on and a guy who just has always struggled to stay healthy and is pretty much limited in his ability to get open. So, yeah, I think some of those things
are
warranted.
This goes back. This is the same conversation we've had about the offensive line, and I'm sure they would give the same verbiage out of their mouths when they were asked this question, that the guys in practice aren't giving us enough. Okay, I get it, but at some point, the guys that are playing aren't producing. Throw somebody out there and figure it out. This is the same conversation we've had with Simmons. I get it. Mikowski's not beating him out. Well, let's see what happens in a game. Let's find out. And you know what? Maybe this is the game that we can find out and get Brandon as 10 snaps or, God forbid, anybody else see the field. So it's worth, I think, in a scenario like that, seeing what you have so that you can judge, can these guys help during Michigan, during a potential playoffs game, something along those lines.
I wonder if he were asked right now if Caleb Brown could and would come back. You know, I don't think he's touched the ball for Iowa. So, I mean, why the heck not?
Well, he's holding out for the new offensive coordinator since they announced that Ferentz isn't coming back. No word if Graham Harrell or maybe Cliff Kingsbury's going to Iowa. They're going to reinvent Iowa defense or Iowa offense, and he's ready for it. McNamara's coming back. He's already said it. So they're going to be rolling, man.
I can almost guarantee that they light it up. I bet that they average 26 points per game next year with somebody. I think it's borderline hilarious that the announcement came from the interim AD. Like, it couldn't even come from Kirk Ferentz. So it probably got told to him.
He's pissed. Yeah, he's pissed. There's no way he's involved in this at all. He, like you said, he was told that this was happening, and he said, I'm not going to be involved with it. You're going to have to do this on your own. And she said, no problem. I'll take care of it, pal.
Good for her. She probably needs to run for governor of Iowa. And I can just imagine Ferentz saying, "Dadgummit, Phil." And he turns to Phil Parker and he says, I don't know how much longer we're going to stand for this. And then, like, maybe Phil Parker does the Magic Johnson, I'm not going to be here sort of thing, because he's probably fed up with it too. Like, his defense can only do so much, and now he sees his longtime boss doesn't even, you know, have the, I'm not going to say it, to get rid of his kid, who just flat out can't coach, can't coordinate an offense at least. But I don't know, man, that's a wormhole. I've got people in my ear, I've got producers, they're like, hey, we really want to hear some Rutgers talk. So, Chuck, I think it's time. We put a pin in this, we take a break, we pay some bills, your salary, and we'll be back right after this with a Rutgers preview. Welcome back, everybody, to Hang Out in the Holy Land, Land Grant's flagship podcast. For Chuck Holmes, I am Josh Dooley, and we are looking ahead to Week 10 of the college football season and Ohio State's matchup with the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. This game will be played Saturday in Piscataway. House of Horrors, I think. I don't know. I don't. They'll probably never lose to Rutgers in Piscataway. Knock, knock, knock. But led by former Ohio State assistant Greg Schiano, Rutgers may have finally earned its S this year. There is or was a running joke around Columbus and maybe elsewhere that because Rutgers has been so bad since joining the Big Ten, that it did not deserve the S. Columbus's primary sports radio station, 97.1 The Fan, has been calling them Rutger for several years now. But Schiano has his team playing really well in 2023. The Scarlet Knights are currently 6-2 and already bowl eligible. They're also coming off their bye week. So this team should be well rested and I'm sure adequately prepared. I say that because I'm a Schiano guy. Like what he did with the defense here in Columbus, and Rutgers was a fun watch during his first stint in New Jersey. In case you're not aware, Schiano also coached Rutgers from 2001 to 2011, winning a bowl game in five of his last six seasons. His second stint has not been nearly as enjoyable, but people need to be reminded that he took over a program that Chris Ash, another former Ohio State assistant, absolutely torpedoed into the ground. Rutgers went 8-33 under Ash, including 3-27 in the Big Ten. So, Chuck, with that said, how do you think Schiano has done with or handled this Rutgers rebuild?
Greg Schiano could coach football, man. He is an old school kind of guy. I know he caught a lot of flack in the NFL because his stuff doesn't work with 30-year-olds. And I completely understand that. But for him to have this team 6-2, I get it. They haven't played a murderer's row schedule to this point. But to just win six games at Rutgers is a big deal. You heard Chris Ash's record, and Chris Ash is a good coach. He had a really successful stint as the defensive coordinator here at Ohio State. So for them to have, or for Schiano to have turned this around this way is impressive. And I don't think it's going to stop. It's not like they have an offense that's a world beater. If he could ever get him a quarterback, he could be somebody that can make a run. I think you and I offhand prior to all of this happening, and maybe it might have even still been when Quinn Ewers was here, I believe I said at one point years ago that Kyle McCord was going to be the starting quarterback at Rutgers because I didn't know if he would make it at Ohio State. Obviously, he did. But if he got somebody like that there, he would be crazy good. I think this team could win 8 or 9 games. That being said, there's still a talent deficiency. I don't doubt that he's going to have them ready to go this weekend, and they're going to play sound football this weekend. The talent discrepancy is just going to be overwhelming, though.
Yeah, I agree with that. We'll get into players and position groups in just a minute, but yeah, it should be pointed out that although the Scarlet Knights are 6-2, their best win is probably week 3 over Virginia Tech, and the Hokies started out 1-3. They're 4-4 now, but Rutgers has otherwise feasted on the likes of Northwestern, Temple. Well, hey, Northwestern's a football team now. But Wagner, Michigan State, I mean, taking nothing away from Schiano and the boys. But they close with Ohio State, Iowa, Penn State, and Maryland, and I expect them to lose all four. I really do. That's still 6-6. That's progress. And they've always had the tougher schedule because they're in the East. In the past, if Rutgers had played in the Big Ten West last couple of years, I don't see why they could not have gotten to 7-8 wins one of these years, especially with Schiano at the helm. But without further ado, let's look at some players, position groups, and matchups here. Starting on offense, the Scarlet Knights do occasionally score, They're averaging 28.1 points per game, which puts them right in the middle of the pack nationally. Again, should be noted that things look a little different when Rutgers goes up against a top-tier-ish opponent. Shiano's squad only put up 7 and 13 against Michigan and Wisconsin, respectively. But look, they're moving the ball and scoring more than they have in years past. In 2021 and 2022, this team finished in the bottom 10 in all of college football in points per game. So it's been much better in 2023. At quarterback, Gavin Wimsatt has taken over full-time, a former 4-star recruit out of Kentucky. He was a major get for the Scarlet Knights. Big, athletic kid, showed flashes in 2021 and 2022. Now the job is his. And while Wimsatt is certainly athletic, he's still not much of a passer. He is completing 50.3% of his passes this season and has just 1,134 yards through the air in 8 games. He completed 45% of his 145 pass attempts last season while throwing more interceptions than touchdowns. Like, it can be pretty rough to watch. But he is 6'3", 225. He can run, as evidenced by his 362 yards and 7 touchdowns on the ground. And he is getting marginally better as a passer. The Buckeyes will absolutely want to keep Wimsatt in the pocket and make him throw. Would you agree?
I just want all of Ohio State fans to take a dose of reality when you look at Wimsatt's stats, because if you had a quarterback at Ohio State that were putting these stats up, Columbus, Ohio would be on fire right now. Like, the whole city would be burning if the quarterback at Ohio State was completing 50% of his passes. So Ohio State fans, enjoy what you have. Yeah, it's obvious they want this guy to sit back there, and this is going to be this defense might play right into what they want him to do. And this is a shot at him, because there's not a lot. JT and Jack Sawyer can just kind of push towards him and keep him right where he wants to be. That's perfect. They're not going to run past him and force him out of the pocket. They're just going to kind of be in front of him like they have been all season. So that's going to be a perfect way for them to keep him right where they want him. And it's, to me, that's going to lead to a really long day for a guy that's just not up to par for this Ohio State defense.
If Ohio State's defense is disciplined, the Buckeyes haven't really played a running quarterback. And Wimsatt wants to be a dual threat. He's working on the passing aspect. But 362 yards in 8 games, like, that's nearly 50 yards per game. So it's going to be a wrinkle for Ohio State, and one that they haven't really been forced to deal with. Even, gosh, they've probably gone up against Devin Brown in practice, who is not a traditional runner, but he will run, and they don't even get to do that, right? So I'm at least interested in that part of things. At running back, the Scarlet Knights have a good one in Kyle Monongai. They really do. I'm not saying he's going to be the next Isaiah Pacheco, who also played under Shiano before finding success and a Super Bowl ring with the Chiefs, but Monongai can play. The difference, I guess, is Pacheco runs a sub 4.4. He's sort of a freak. Regardless, Monongai is a stud. He led the Big Ten in rushing yards going into last week. Braylon Allen eclipsed him by just 10 yards, so leading rusher in the Big Ten is sort of a big deal. He's got 140 more than Blake Corum in the same number of games. Rutgers will lean heavily on Monongai and then sprinkle in Wimsatt as well as a number of, I guess, other backs. And on the perimeter, Ohio State will be tasked with covering guys like Christian Dremel, Jaquay Jackson, and Isaiah Washington. Dremel is Rutgers' leader in all receiving categories with 23 catches, 294 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Sort of a smaller slot-specific guy. If Ohio State's secondary is banged up, could present an issue. Don't know if Jordan Hancock will be in the slot. But then Jackson and Washington are interesting too. The former was a D2 standout last year with nearly 1,200 yards and 13 touchdowns, while the latter is a big body at 6'3", 210. And the Scarlet Knights also still have Taysom Hill body double, Johnny Langan, the quarterback, running back, tight end, homo sapien, linebacker, punter, everything that he is. He's really only been used at tight end this season, but we know from previous years that he can do a little bit of everything. So, Chuck, is there a skill position guy on the Rutgers roster that instills any amount of fear into you?
Yeah, I mean, if they can get a roll on the ground and Mong and I can get rolling, that's troublesome. If you look at his game by game, though, he has really feasted on bad defenses. And hey, kudos to him. Eat when you can eat. But Michigan, he was 11 for 27. Wisconsin, he was 8 for 16. So I don't anticipate this front being much for him. I just looked at the pictures of some of the receivers as I was looking at the stats as well. And Christian Dremel doesn't scare me at all. I just looked at a picture of him. My man looks like he should be in an 80s cop movie with that stash, that caterpillar, man. That thing will hurt somebody. But he is tearing up the co-eds in New Jersey for sure with this look. But he is not going to scare Jordan Hancock at all.
No, I don't think so. I just wonder what that secondary looks like. But you would have to assume that, maybe I'm assuming wrong, Ohio State probably has a good idea about Lathan Ransom and his ability. And for my money, as good as Jordan Hancock's been,
he's
in the
not
slot,
playing.
I don't think so either.
There's no way Ransom plays. I mean, it, as cautious as they've been with other guys, and you've got Styles with it would be different if Styles was playing full time in the slot. Then you're like, oh, what do we do? But with Hancock having handled 99% of the snaps last week, they can just stick with that, and Styles can slot in. And maybe they can get far enough ahead that Cam Martinez can actually play some snaps that mean something.
For me, they'd have to be up 100-0. So I'll sign up for that. That's fine. I'll take that right now. Up front, look, I'm not going to pretend that I know a lot about this Rutgers offensive line, other than the fact that they've rolled out at least three different lineups this season due to injuries and performance. The team has mixed and matched, but still found a way to at least run the ball effectively. On the other side, on defense, Rutgers has a bunch of tough dudes who love to attack the ball and hit their opponents real, real hard. Obviously, it's a bit more sophisticated than that, but at the same time, it's not. Like, they've got an effective scheme, they are very well coached, they tackle well, and they go after the ball. The Scarlet Knights have forced 8 fumbles in 8 games, and they've also been credited with 38 passes defended or deflected. Now, this defense is okay up front, in my opinion. Defensive ends Wesley Bailey and Aaron Lewis are tied for the team lead in sacks with 3 apiece. But the linebackers and the defensive backs are far and away the strength of Shiano's defense. At linebacker, Tyreem Powell, Deion Jennings, and Muhammad Torre are 1, 2, 3 on the team in tackles, all with 50-plus. All three are smart, athletic, and they fly around. They're very, very good. If OSU started Cody Simon full-time and played 3 linebackers most of the time, I would be tempted to put Rutgers' linebackers above them. I like them that much. Chuck, am I crazy?
I don't think you are. And that part of it is where it makes sense. With a Shiano team, this is how he builds his teams. You can get away at linebacker with not having the biggest freak ever playing the position. It's really hard defensive line. It's really hard in the secondary if you don't have like crazy athletes to get production. But at linebacker, you could get that guy that's a little bit smarter than everybody else, a little bit tougher than everybody else, that may be a step slower than the guys that play at Ohio State or Michigan, and they can still be really productive. And that's what these guys are. They're going to get to the ball. They're not going to quote unquote fly to the ball like we hear so many linebackers do, but they're still going to be there, and they're going to make this Ohio State team earn these yards on the ground as they're trying to hopefully get a victory.
Which means that hopefully Travion Henderson brings his A game and the offensive line for Ohio State brings their A game, because I do really like those linebackers. And I wish I had looked it up. I'm working off of one screen right now, but I seem to recall like a linebacker or two, maybe a couple of ends for Rutgers that are now playing in the NFL because they were productive, smart football players. And like you said, Schiano can coach football and he can coach defense. In the secondary, safety Michael Dixon is fourth on the team in tackles and T2 in pass breakups. He's all over the place. Same could also be said for Shaquan Loyal, the team's other safety. Elsewhere in the back end, there are a few familiar names, plus just a great one, all right? Desmond Igbinosin, brother of OSU's Davis Igbinosin, plays sort of a hybrid role, I guess. Like, I've seen him listed as both a corner and a safety. Max Melton is strictly a corner. He is the brother of former Rutgers standout Bo. And then I like this one. Robert Longerbeam, I call him Bobby Lightbeam, it rounds out the starters. He has 8 pass breakups and 2 forced fumbles this season. I want to say something else about this defense as a whole, but first I'll turn it back to you, Chuck. Is this a secondary that can be thrown on, even if it's by a gimpy or hobbled Kyle McCord?
It can, because physically these guys aren't going to be able to hold up. I feel like Desmond Igbinosin is the only one that has a shot. I mean, he's 6'3", 205, but if he's moving back and forth, you would think he's probably going to play some more safety in this game in the hopes of keeping the ball in front of them. But these other corners are 175 pounds, 190 pounds. They're just not going to be able to hold up to what Ohio State hopefully physically can do. That's one thing, especially if Emeka Biceps is back. If he's back and he can bully some guys in the slot, this kid that's 175 doesn't have a chance. None of these guys are going to be able to stick with Marvin Harrison. I am interested, though, to see if Desmond and Davison play the same way, because if they are, he's my new favorite Rutgers Scarlet Knight. I haven't seen him play much, and I haven't seen him flying around like his brother, so I'm hopeful that he does that so that I can root for him going forward like I root for his brother.
I sort of hope they meet on special teams somehow. I haven't seen a lot of Davison out there for Ohio State
teams. Yeah, but gunners. I feel like if he's not asking to be a gunner and be able to work against his brother on like a punt return or a punt team, shame on him.
Yeah, what I wanted to say, though, is beyond the coaching and just the raw ability, what makes this defense better is the experience and the cohesion. You look at the roster and the career stats, a ton of these dudes have spent 3, 4, even 5 years at Rutgers playing. Like being players, starting games for Rutgers. And in this day and age, when the transfer portal is king, I find that to be both refreshing and impressive. I'd say that more than half of these guys could go start for a more traditionally successful team on the defense, but they chose to stay in Jersey and chop wood with Coach Schiano. So I respect the hell out of that. And they've got some good players.
That's an indictment on what Greg Schiano and his coaching staff are doing there. They're building something for these guys to want to stay. And I'm sure Schiano's connections are helping that. It probably helps when he can say, hey, Bill Belichick really likes my players. And he look at a list of Rutgers guys.
It might not help anymore to reference Bill Belichick.
Well, you're still getting to the league, right? So it's an indictment, though, because, and a good one, because that is impressive for him. There's 20 schools at the Rutgers level of Division I football that are getting decimated every offseason and having to rebuild. And for him to not have to do that this past season is good on him. And I hope for their sake that continues and he continues to build and picks the right players as they're recruiting so that they can continue to build this.
It'll be impressive if he continues to build up this roster, and you get like USC going to play in Piscataway in November in a couple of years. Just that Jersey toughness and that Shiano mentality, and they're just kicking Trojan ass all over the place. I hope that we see it too, but the only asses I want to see kicked this weekend are those of the Scarlet Knights, no offense. Chuck, the spread is currently around 18 points, depending on where you look. It may move throughout the week. Give me your prediction as to whether Ohio State covers and just what is the final score going to be?
Yeah, I think they cover. This defense is too tough for Rutgers. I can't see Rutgers scoring more than 10 points in this game, and I think it's a 31-7 type game, and it's an easy cover.
So I thought you were going to say my exact prediction. I'll go 31-10. I'm with you. I don't know what the weather is going to be like in Piscataway this weekend, but if there's any elements, if it's cold at all, like Ohio State's offense, especially with Kyle McCord, they may not run up and down the field. If anybody's banged up and they're going against this Scarlet or this Rutgers defense, 31 points is probably way more than you need against this Rutgers offense. And yeah, I think that Wimsatt and company are going to struggle to put up points just based on literally everything we've seen this year. Ohio State's giving up about 10 points per game, and that's against teams with more explosive options and or weapons and or better quarterbacks. Again, no offense. So we're on the same page here. 31-7 for you, 31-10 over here. This is now the stretch of the season where it would be great to just go see Ohio State take care of business. Everyone's healthy. Work out some of the kinks. Try and figure out your offensive line, your run game to the extent that you can, and just take care of business. Move on about your day and gear up for that big game come the end of November. But every conference road game is, in theory, a trap game, so the Buckeyes do need to take this game seriously, and hopefully they get some guys back or have some guys in the lineup that we've talked about thus far. But that's going to do it for Chuck and I. We will be back with you guys on Sunday talking about this game and anything else that comes up between now and then. Anything in college football, anything with, I don't know, like cheating scandals, or I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there. But until next time, please hit us up on social, interact with us, send us emails, whatever you want to do. Please like, rate, review, and subscribe to the pod. And until next time, as always, go Bucks.